Good day from Wall Street. This is Jack Marks for Wall Street Reporter, and today I am speaking with Chris Castle. He is the CEO of Chatham Rock Phosphate Limited. The stock symbol on the TSX is NZP. Chris, coming to us from New Zealand, welcome.
Yeah, Jack, thanks very much. Nice to meet you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk to you today.
Absolutely. So, Chris, you know, from an investor's perspective, from what I've read about your company, your stock really falls into that special situation category for investors. So, you have this resource project, which is potentially worth several billion dollars, but the company's market cap right now is, I believe, around $3 million or so U.S. However, you have some very interesting catalysts in place, which can unlock this value, and that's kind of what I'd like you to tell us more about. So, that being said, can you start off by telling us what your company does?
Yes, I will. The company is developing a marine phosphate deposit offshore New Zealand in an area called the Chatham Rise, which is a large undersea plateau, and the deposit is in the central part of that plateau in depths of water of about 400 metres. That sounds tricky, but it's not, because the deposit itself is right on the surface of the seafloor and it can be easily dredged. And we have a technical partner, a Dutch company called Boskalis, that is one of the leading companies in the world that does that. They're a shareholder, and we've been working with them for the last 8 years. So it's relatively straightforward to extract that. The deposit is in situ value is somewhere around $5 to $7 billion, and we can extract it and sell it on very, very sound economics at the moment. The sort of rock phosphate it is a bit special too, because it's a very low cadmium, and cadmium is quite good in batteries, but not very good in people. And so cadmium in phosphates is bad for people and is being banned in various parts of the world, including the European Union at the moment. So our rock is special, will over time attract a premium for that, because of that characteristic. But that's not in our forecast at the moment. It's the economics of this project are very attractive now without taking into account any premium relating to that.
So the size of the resource is, you said it is $5 billion plus dollars.
Yes, there's between 23.5 and 25 million tons on the seafloor there. There's probably another 100 to 150 million tons around that, but it's lower grade. And so we would only develop that once we've mined out the high-grade part of the deposit, which will take us about 22 years at the planned rate of production.
Okay. So here is the focus of the interview. What is in the way of you getting started on extracting the phosphate?
There's really only one factor. Any mining project needs to be able to identify the deposit, work out where they're going to, how to recover it, and then how to sell the product. We've got those three things sorted out, and we also have a mining permit. But in New Zealand, you need another permit called an environmental permit. That's separate. That's not just in most countries you have environmental conditions attached to a mining permit, but we do it differently here. We applied for an environmental permit back in 2015 and were turned down, and our market capitalization then fell from 30 million US to about 2. And subsequently, we have looked at what we did wrong last time, and we're in the process of reapplying and raising money to do that. So what's in our way is getting that environmental permit the second time. And I spend most of my time talking to investors, explaining why we think we'll get it, what has changed. And I can give you a lot more detail on that if you would like.
Okay. So, we're going to attach the company, the presentation, which has some of those bullets on the interview page. But, for anybody that may not have access to that, maybe if you could kind of recap kind of the brief history of, why you didn't get the permit last time and why you expect to get it this time. What is going to be different this time around?
I think last time the people who made the decision were a decision-making committee appointed by the Environmental Protection Authority here in New Zealand. They it was clear from their written judgment that they didn't understand much of the application, and that's really our fault, partially because we obviously didn't explain the scientific. There was a lot of science in it, a lot of analysis work done, and clearly it wasn't translated into the understandable English. The other factor which affected it was the decision-making committee was comprised of people who were largely not really qualified to be looking at a marine mining hearing. They were urban planners, an industrial chemist, and a couple of other people who had no relevant skills. So that's all changed. There've been a number of changes which make it different for us. The law has changed, and so it now makes it possible that decision making committee is not appointed by the Environmental Protection Authority, who are anti development, but more by the Minister for the Environment, who has to have a more balanced approach. So we'll have a better qualified group of people looking at the project application. The second thing which we're going to change is we've just identified shortcomings in our first application. Obviously, it wasn't easy to understand, so we're going to focus a lot more on, to be blunt, dumbing it down so it's able to be stood. It's not a series of scientific reports that that nobody can get their mind around. The EPA's operating procedures have also changed. They've started to work with applicants rather than seeing themselves as a gatekeeper. So that's a significant change over the last 3 years. And in New Zealand, the environment has changed over the last 3 years as well. There's a strong focus on water quality and carbon emissions. And by our project, our fertiliser actually reduces runoff into waterways by 80%. And the fact that it's mined here in New Zealand and not in Morocco means that the related carbon emissions are much lower, about 90% less. So those are very, very relevant issues for our current government, and so they're attributes which will be helpful to us.
Okay. And
the other thing which...
I'm sorry, keep going. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, the other thing which has changed is that in the past we had a number of... This is a public process and people make submissions either in support or against. Most of our supporters were the silent majority. They basically said nothing, thinking we would get the permit okay. So we didn't mobilise them enough to express their opinions, and so that's going to change. And the other very significant change is that the First Nations people who live in the area where we're going to operate have had a close look at the project, and when they opposed it last time, and now they're going to help us actually get the permit. So they're actually going to work with us.
This is the Maori.
This is the Maori people.
Yeah. Maori.
They recently, we made a joint announcement with them recently where they basically said, well, we, subject to checking out all the environmental aspects, we would like to work with you to help you get the permit. And that's unprecedented in New Zealand. There's an automatic opposition to most projects in New Zealand from not just Maori, but from anybody local. Yeah, the term "not in your back," "not in my backyard," I think it's probably an international phrase, NIMBY.
Yeah.
And in this particular case, we've got a case of reverse NIMBYism. You've actually got the people most affected by the project saying they want to support it, of course, subject to making sure the environmental aspects are okay. But they're listening and they'll work with us, and that's a huge break forward, and that moved our stock price 40% in a week, that announcement, and it's going to make it much easier for us to raise the capital we need to reapply.
Why are they in favor now? And I think they're rather influential in this process, I assume.
I think they have new leadership, and the leadership is prepared to look at the project. Whereas quite often people in New Zealand oppose projects sort of automatically without even thinking about it. And so the people involved now have had a look at the benefits of how they will benefit if this operation is near there, because they're on the Chatham Islands. We're operating just off their coast, on 200 kilometres away, but we're closer to them than anywhere else, and we're operating within their fishing areas, which is a sensitive area issue for them, obviously. So I think they've just looked. This project absolutely stacks up if you look at it closely, but people have tended to just automatically say no because it's unknown. I think that's the difference.
Okay. So you have, so it seems like the political winds have shifted, in your favor now towards getting towards moving towards this environmental approval.
Yes, definitely. And I guess another factor which has indirectly come into play is that we have discovered in our project area the presence of rare earths. And rare earths are seen by our present government as strategic. They will reduce our dependence on rare earths imported from China and other places. And so an extraction process which involves rare earths is seen as a really potentially as a big plus for us. So that's been helpful as well.
Okay. I want to ask you about the rare earths a little bit later because that's something that's pretty interesting. But what is the path right now towards getting that environmental permit? Like what do you need to do? How far away is it to get a hearing, or what is the process? Maybe you can kind of walk us through that.
Yeah, well, the first thing is to raise the cash we need to actually to commit to the process, because once you get started, we're employing a project director and we'll be having about 30 different scientific reports already done. So we need that basically. The amount required is about 6 million Canadian. I guess that's about, what, 4.5, 5 million US. Once that's raised, we push the button and it takes 15 months' work to rewrite the reports and redo the application, and that involves getting some more data at sea, and so that needs to happen during the summer here because the weather conditions are better. So 15 months. Let's say we raise the money by the end of June. 15 months later, the application will be complete. It'll be submitted, and then it takes 9 months for the hearing process. So it's 2 years from, let's say, 30 June. So it'll be 30 June 2021. So that's the path forward. At that point, we're fully permitted, and we then sign a mining contract with Boskalis, our Dutch partner, and they spend 2 years adapting a vessel so it can operate at greater depths. So we're in production in June 2023.
Okay.
So I would think by then we'll be owned by someone else, because the moment we're fully permitted, we'll be a very attractive asset to other fertilizer companies and want low cadmium fertilizer, for example.
Okay, so in order to get the environmental permit process started, you need to raise, roughly four and a half million US,
Correct.
to do all the paperwork, to do the additional reports. Okay,
Yeah.
so can you talk a little bit about maybe brief history of the project? I mean, this has been a while in development.
Yes. Well, it goes right back to 2007, 12 years ago. And in that year, phosphate prices rose 900% around the world. Driven by the Moroccan state enterprise OCP, who can effectively control world trade at that point. And the reason why they control world trading prices is the fact that the US and China both decided not to export phosphate anymore, but to keep it for themselves. So that put OCP, the Moroccan company, into the same sort of position as OPEC did when that cartel influenced oil prices going back a long time. And so at that point, the phosphate price from $40 a ton to 480. And I was aware of this deposit in New Zealand, and so we applied for it. And we got the environmental permit a couple of years later, and then the mining permit in 2013. Since 2010, when we got the environmental permit, I've raised 41 million New Zealand dollars, which is about 27 US, to progress this project, to get the mining permit and to apply for the environmental permit the first time. During that period, I've assembled a team of people who actually worked on the project when it was held by other people back in the early 1980s. So I've actually got three scientists with about 120 years accumulated experience in the deposit on the team. So we progressed happily through until March 2015, and were turned down. So that's sort of the background history. And since then, we've seen our market capitalization collapse. We've struggled to survive, but we have, and now we're very much on an upswing with, for example, the recent announcement about the Maori support.
Okay. And You mentioned that once once you have the environmental permit in place, there's a possibility that you might be bought out by another major phosphate player. What in this kind of area, what would a project like yours be valued at with assuming all the permits were in place?
We've had probably six or seven independent reports done by people who are involved with helping us fundraise over the last few years, and the valuations are in the range of 200 to 300 million US
With the permits.
for the project with the permits.
Okay, that's without any
And
phosphate
so
being pulled out.
that's basically discounted cash flow analysis based on future cash flows. So I guess that's, but if you look at recent movements in fertilizer prices and the lowering of production costs and so on, we're looking like making about $70 million US a year. So a $300 million valuation is actually light. So I think ultimately, when we're in production, the value is probably nearer to $1 billion, assuming that all these assumptions actually are still valid and in place. And I mean, that's the sort of disclaimer I probably have to say. assuming all these assumptions actually happen, those are the sorts of numbers. So we're pretty attractive at a current market capitalization of $3 million. And we are talking to other fertilizer companies now and other people who might help us get the permits, because that gives them a very cheap entry into part of the project.
So can you maybe talk a little bit about the economics of the project? Assuming the permits were all in place, how would the economics work? Maybe you can discuss that.
Well, that's what's really exciting, is because this project is contract mined. Once we're fully permitted, we, as I mentioned, the Dutch company that I've talked about before, will then go away and adapt a vessel. And the way the contract with them is going to work is they're going to charge us so much a ton to deliver the product onshore. And the most recent indicative price was about $70 US landed onshore in New Zealand. So we receive it for that, and the current indicative selling price based on different uses for the product is about 2.5 times that. So we're looking at around about $165, $170 a ton. So that's the margin per ton without any capital investment on our part. And that's the special part about this project. We don't have any CapEx. There's no development cost. We don't actually own any assets now, and we won't own any assets. We will just effectively buy the product from them at so much a ton and sell it for more. So we're really a phosphate trading company with a mining permit. That's really what we are. We're not a mining company. There's no development capital. We're not going to have to build a processing plant or a mining camp or anything else like that. It's a very, very simple operation with no CapEx. And that's almost unique for a junior mining company.
Right. So I guess that's the trade-off for being in your position of having to, expend all this money for the environmental permit. You don't have any CapEx. Okay.
You're basically you're paying an entry fee to get under the top table, but after that you feed for free.
Right. So you make roughly $165 a ton profit.
No, we basically think we based on the types of uses this product can be used for, because it can be used either as an organic fertilizer or as a triple superphosphate substitute. We think the weighted average selling price is about $165 to $170 a ton. Take off the $70 a ton of extraction cost. So let's say somewhere between $90, $95 and $100 a ton gross profit, then take off our operating costs, which would be nominal because we don't actually do anything. And I'm sitting in an office which is 20 feet by 10, and we'll be the same once we're in operation. We'll have one individual who's handling the sales contracts to the fertilizer companies. We'll have another guy handling the contract with Australis. They'll have someone like me keeping in touch with investors and leading the company, and that's about it. It's a very, very lean operation, and so the economics are fantastic.
So roughly $100 of profit per ton.
Yeah, and I didn't mention the production. Basically, it's 1.5 million tons a year. So,
1.5 million tons a year, and I think you mentioned it has a 20-year life, expected life?
Up to 22. If we can expand the existing resource from, it's 23.4 million tons at the moment, but with some small sampling, according to our 43-101 report, some small sampling will get it up to 35 million tons. So 1.5 million tons a year, it works out at about 22 years.
Okay, so that's roughly, if I'm doing my math correctly, the gross profit is 150 million plus.
Yeah, it'll make, the gross profit is around about 100 million per year for 22 years. So you're talking, what, 2.2 billion.
Okay, so 100 million a year.
Yeah, this is all US. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Gross profit, US gross dollars.
Profit, yeah.
Okay, based on current prices. A phosphate.
Obviously there are more people on the planet. There's less arable land available, and people are getting richer. So they, as you get richer, you eat meat protein, which requires a lot more fertilizer to be produced. So the prognosis for fertilizer prices going forward is fairly positive.
Okay, so this sounds very compelling. So. So what's the next step forward? Are you raising capital right now?
Yes, yeah. I'm in constant fundraising mode. If you have a look at the presentation, which is actually on our website, it shows that the fundraising line in the graphic is just a continuous steady climb. That's really my full-time job at the moment. And as I said, I've been talking to a lot of private individuals, but also to strategic investors. Such as fertilizer companies or shipping companies, to come in and partner us and help us raise that $6 million New Zealand or about $4 million US quick in one hit. Because we need to raise it in pretty much one hit so I can commit to the contracts required to go through the whole process.
Okay, so this $4.5 million US, it has to be done, you have to have it all in the bank or before you can make the commitments?
In the bank or committed. So if it was, for example, partly paid shares or convertible notes or some, where I know there's enough certainty that we're not going to have to stop halfway through the project because we've run out of money. Because, you can't have half an application. You've basically got to do it. And then half of the cost is actually paying for the cost of the hearing. We pay the New Zealand government to review it, and we would need to be able to provide evidence to them that we could pay for that.
Huh. How much do you have to pay them for this hearing?
Well, basically half of the money required. So you're talking about $2 million US. Half of it's preparing the application, and the other half is actually paying for the decision-making group, paying for the rental of the premises, paying for their lunches, paying for their independent experts. It's a real user pay system, but that's just the way it is.
Okay,
you know, it is what it is.
Okay, that I understand. Okay, so right now you're in fundraising mode, and when do you expect to have this capital raised?
It's really just a matter of meeting the right person or the right people. We've got one company doing due diligence on us now, but this is probably a bit crude as an analogy, but basically I kiss a lot of frogs.
Right.
And every now and then one turns into a prince or a princess and writes a big check. And that's happened two or three times in our project life. I mean, we have raised $27 million US and some of that was in big chunks. So it's just, it could be around the next corner, Jack, or it might be a month away or 2 months away, but one thing's for sure, we're going to keep moving until we do raise it.
Okay, right. So you have a track record of being able to raise money. So, the odds are that you'll be able to get this capital at some point in the near future here. With that being said, Chris, can you tell us about your background and maybe some of the other key members of your team?
Okay, well, just quickly on me, my background is, I hate to admit it, but I'm originally trained as an accountant, but My first job was working for a group of companies that had a mining component. So I started getting involved and interested in mining and mineral developments back in the 70s. Subsequently, I left that group and formed a group of companies which had mining in them. And later on, I got involved back in 1999 with a nickel project in Vietnam. I found the money for that, listed it on the Toronto Exchange, and 13 years later, we went into production. So we've now mined that deposit out. So I have a sort of a background in finding a project and backing it until it succeeds. Beside me, probably the most important person is someone who's joined the team relatively recently. It's a woman called Renee Grogan, who will be the project leader for the environmental reapplication. She's a director of the World Oceans Council, is a consultant working in the marine permitting space, and works for governments and NGOs and so on. So she's quite well respected on both sides. She's got a track record of achieving, I think, 9 different mining permits, 9 different environmental permits in a row. She's not used to failing, so she's now part of our team. I mentioned before, I've got 3 marine geophysicists on the team with a combined experience of about 120 years. They go back to when this project was first developed back in the late 70s and early 80s by the New Zealand and German governments in a joint venture. It didn't proceed, but they did all the work then. Then I've got one more environmental scientist and a geologist who looks after all our permitting work with the New Zealand government and is a guru on the actual deposit itself. So that's pretty much it for the moment. We would, when required, take on a marketing director full-time. We've had one part-time for a while who used to work for OCP, the Moroccan company, and who's developed our markets for us going back a few years, but he's not with us now because we don't need him. We're not actually marketing anything yet. So he'll rejoin the team. That's pretty much about it. I guess we'll need somebody to manage the contract with Boskalis, but we don't need them until we negotiate with them, which will be in mid-2021. So that's the team in a nutshell. It's pretty small and compact.
Okay. So it seems that you're very tenacious. You mentioned this Vietnam project that took you 13 years to get into production.
Yes, it did. It was, it's hard to get things done in some places. And there was no history of mining in Vietnam, especially where we were. And the deposit was in a very remote, hard-to-get-to area. But we had a good look at it. I got the right people involved, and we ended up raising, I don't know, 150 or so million Canadian and developing the project. And it happened. Ended up being the largest taxpayer in North Vietnam, employed 500 people, and was a great success. So that's very encouraging when you're looking at the next one.
Okay. One thing I want to get back to, because I almost forgot, is you mentioned the rare earths components. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, it's interesting. The rare earths are not rare, as you know. They're all over the planet. But the hard part is extracting them and justifying the mining costs. And what's really interesting for us is we're already recovering the rock phosphate from the ocean and separating it and having it delivered onshore for an estimated $70 a ton. Within that rock phosphate, there are 15 of the 17 rare earths. And the analysis we've done so far of that, which was actually undertaken by the US Geological Survey, is that the rare earths within the phosphate are actually much more valuable than the rock phosphate itself. And so we are literally right at the moment talking to people about the technology involved in actually extracting it and using, trying to get the rare earths out as well. So that's exciting. But the other aspect about it is that on the seafloor, where we are, in the muds, the seafloor muds, which the rock phosphate sits in, they contain vast quantities of rare earths as well. But we're not bringing that material to the surface and keeping it. We're only separating the nodules on the seafloor. So if we were to try and mine those seafloor muds, it would require a completely different extraction process. And so we're working through the value of what's in the muds as well. But that's on the first analysis indicates that it's the material out there in the seafloor mud is worth perhaps 100 times the value of the nodules. So you're talking, you know, I've already mentioned the sort of numbers the nodules are worth, the phosphorite nodules. So it's potentially very big numbers, but it's worth nothing unless you know how to separate it, and that's what we're working on at the moment.
Okay, so but you're saying that potentially the rare earths are worth more than this phosphate, so it's more than more than this 100 million a year that you can get from the phosphate.
Yeah, yes, quite a lot more. The number's so big that it's sort of hard to say it, so I won't. But it's rare earths and other quite interesting minerals and elements out there. And the problem is we don't know how to separate them. And the mining system we have for the phosphates doesn't separate out that other material from the seafloor muds. It just sends them back over the side.
Okay. Chris, so let's kind of recap. What are the, you know, key milestones you have coming up, you know, over the next, let's call it 6 months, 12 months, that investors should keep their eye on? Is it just this capital raise, or what else is there is going to be the news flow?
I think the capital raise is probably the critical one, because a lot of investors are assuming that we'll never be able to raise the capital. So that risk is priced into our market cap at the moment. They're just assuming we're not going to make it. And so that's the first big milestone. When we do raise that 4 million or a significant chunk of it, that's an event which I think will excite our investors, both existing and possible new investors. The other milestone, I think, is more talk about working with the Maori people on our reapplication, and I guess the other one we've just been talking about is if and when we can report some promising results in terms of extracting the rare earths. That's something which could happen in the next few months as well. So those are sort of milestones that are the most immediate milestones. Further down the track of actually getting the environmental permit, as you know, is 2 years away. So, but investors can look forward to more before that, I think.
Okay. So in your opinion, this is my last question here. So in your opinion, what would you say are the top three reasons why investors should consider your stock today?
Well, we've got a very low market value compared with the potential value of the project. So the upside is, people talk about a 10-bagger. This is probably a 100-bagger. So if you're an investor that invests in these sorts of projects, you would normally have more than one of something like this. And so the return on capital is very good. I think the fact that management is the largest shareholder group in the company is a factor that people should take into account. The third one, I think, is I've already referred to, is the no development capital required. When we're permitted, we're not going to go back to shareholders and say, "Hey, now we need to raise 150 million to build a plant." We're just going to wait while Boskalis adapts their vessel. We'll start operating, and then we'll just be banking a check every week. So I guess those are all sort of financially related ones. I guess the other important factor is that we have a very strategic location. We're on the other side of the world. World phosphate prices would have to collapse to almost zero to make our project uneconomic because of the shipping costs. So I guess those are the key factors.
Okay. Well, on that note, Chris, I want to thank you. And, we look forward to hearing more about the project in the months ahead.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity to talk, Jack. I've really enjoyed that today.